The presenting sponsor of today's podcast is Fifth Element CBD. Fifth Element is ultra-high milligram CBD focused on relief and recovery after a workout. They are specially designed for people with an active lifestyle, from weekend warriors to professional athletes to bucket list gym enthusiasts. Fifth Element, aka 5E, is full-spectrum high-milligram hemp to help you whenever, wherever you need it, whether it's after the gym or after work. Get yours today to feel better tomorrow by visiting 5ehemp.com and use the promo code MONSTER for 50% off. Yes, you heard that right. 50% off. Half off. That's 5ehemp.com and use the code MONSTER. Go to 5ehemp and get 50% off. That's the number 5, the letter E, hemp.com.
Welcome back to another episode on your Over the Monster podcast feed. We are back with you again right after the game, and this time the spirits are a little higher. Red Sox coming off a big game to win. They take it 14-6 down in Tampa. Today it's just two of us. It is myself and Keaton. And Keaton, I think we got basically the two polar opposite experiences with these first two games, and fortunately today is the positive end of that spectrum.
Yeah, without having watched the game, if you told me you got one inning and five runs out of Chris Sale but walked away with a win, I wouldn't have believed it. But yeah, I went from feeling very happy to very sad to very, very happy.
It was all around great, other than, I guess, Chris Sale. But sort of similar to the first game. Obviously the result wasn't the same, but short outing and then a good relief appearance after, except instead of being pretty good like Nick Pivetta was on Thursday, Tanner Houck was out of his mind for five innings. But yeah, I guess we could start there. I mean, I think the story of the game turned out to be the offense, but as I was watching it, for most of it, it kind of felt like the Tanner Houck game. I mean, he was just, like I said, yep. He was unbelievable. He did give up one run on a solo homer that just barely cleared the fence, and maybe it was fan interference. It was extremely close either way, but five innings, five strikeouts. At one point, he had gone, dating back to his second-to-last regular season outing, he retired 30 straight batters, a streak that was broken up by Wander Franco in this game. But I mean, he's just been on a roll, and he's such a big weapon. Especially, I mean, the stuff is obviously great, but just the thing that stood out with him, even going back to last summer when he made his debut, is that he just never seems affected at all by the environment that he's in, and that's obviously key for the playoffs, and it's not changing. I mean, he was, like I said, I mean, I think the offense is the story of the game, but Tanner Houck really stood out in a big way here.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, I mean, this outing was obviously huge, and it kind of puts him up there with like the Evaldi Pedro postseason relief appearance lore with the Red Sox, because the Red Sox didn't get all those runs back immediately. It took him until the fifth inning to take the lead again. And that was after three innings of work from Tanner Houck. And to have the reassurance of the offense going up to bat that you could just kind of slowly claw it back, but you knew when Tanner Houck was on the mound, he wasn't going to give up any runs and give you a chance again in the top half of the next inning. It helps boost the confidence of the offense to keep rolling, keep clawing back, and then eventually they broke it open in the 7th, 8th, and 9th.
Yeah, I think you're right that it is sort of approaching that pantheon that you were talking about. I don't expect that it would get that credit just because the game ended up being so lopsided and the offense took over, and it doesn't, in hindsight, doesn't look like that. But you're right. I mean, it didn't, when he came in, it felt like the game was essentially over. It was only a 3-run game, but just it felt deflating. And really, the Red Sox had a chance in the second right after an answer back when they got a leadoff single to start off the second, and they didn't get it. It kind of felt like the game was over to me at that point. And Hauk totally saved it. You're right. And I mean, I think this, we don't have to spend really much time at all on it, but I think this offseason is going to be spent, a lot of it is going to be spent wondering what the future is for Tanner Houck and what his role is. But I mean, I said it, other people said it during his game tonight. It almost doesn't matter what his role is, because whatever he does, it's going to be exciting. I mean, he's just that kind of pitcher. He's not just good. He's like incredibly fun to watch.
Yeah, adding that sinker, and even tonight he kind of had a feel for a changeup a bit too, giving him 5 pitches to work with. That's pretty hard to kind of like, specifically having the sinker working. I know there's been a lot of stories like kind of towards the end of the season about him kind of by like chance picking that up in the beginning of the season, getting more and more comfortable with it. And it really kind of shows, because he's able to mix his pitches really far more significantly than he was in the beginning of the season, keeping guys on their toes a lot more, and just looks far more electric. And it just kind of continues to build his confidence with every single outing.
Yeah, he had 5 whiffs on the sinker. He threw 9 of them. He got 7 swings, and 5 of them were whiffs. I mean, that's outrageous. It's absolutely insane.
Especially for a pitch he just learned. Like, yeah. That is just wild feel.
It's crazy. And I mean, his slider was, he had one slider that, you'll see, you can just go to Pitching Ninja. I'm sure it's been retweeted like 500 times by now.
The Franco one?
Yeah, the one to Franco. I mean, that was that was stupid. That can't be allowed. But yeah, I mean, I think Hauck was one of the major stories. And obviously, the offense as well. The Red Sox scored 14 runs, got 20 hits. They had 5 home runs, 4 of which the first 4 came on 2 strikes, which I think that's significant, just in that the Red Sox have been really good, or at least in the first half, they were really good with 2 strikes and 2 outs, and that sort of came back here, just never really giving up an at bat. And Kike Hernandez and JD Martinez in particular stood out. They each had a home run. Kike had 5 hits, 4 of which went for extra bases. JD had 4 hits, obviously coming off that ankle injury. And just basically the entire offense was there. Hunter Renfroe didn't have a great game. Christian Arroyo looked bad. Kyle Schwarber had some bad at-bats. But the 2 through 8 guys, I mean, that was just an unstoppable machine. That whole lineup was just a force tonight. And I mean, I think the key is that righties with velocity. It seems like those are the guys that the Red Sox want to face. And they got to Baz, they got to McHugh. McHugh doesn't have huge velocity, but I mean, I think Baz, they just got in a rhythm early, and it was just over from there.
Yeah, and this is kind of how we've seen the offense work all season. So I compiled some of these numbers before, because some things stood out to me, kind of similar to what you were just outlining. But the batters 2 through 6 have 23 of the 29 hits in this series. The 7, 8, 9, 1 are only 6 for 35, which is 171. But that's how the offense has really lived and survived all year. How many times have we talked about the top of the order being an issue, and they've had, I don't know, probably 6, 7, 8 different leadoff hitters throughout the course of the season. We've spent a lot of time talking about the bottom of the order. But even if they struggle, it doesn't matter, because the middle of the order is so freaking good when they're going. And that's when the Red Sox have had their issues in scoring runs and not being able to string runs together. It's because that middle of the order gets neutralized. And you kind of saw it to an extent yesterday. The middle of the order had 7 of the 9 hits yesterday. They were just all singles and couldn't put any together to score any runs. And that really is kind of the recipe for beating the Red Sox. The issue is, whoever is in that 2-6 range is not going to be an easy out every single time they're up, and you're not going to be able to keep that offense down for long. And today was really kind of just that muscling out of being stifled yesterday and kind of taking out some of that frustration.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny, you're right about that, especially with the leadoff spot all year. It's kind of ironic, though, that Kike was a big part of the offense tonight. He hit 2nd in this game, but he was, at least in the first half, he was the guy we're kind of pulling our hair out in the leadoff spot about for a lot. Early in the season. But yeah, I mean, you were talking about how to beat the Red Sox. I think the Red Sox figure out how to beat the Rays, or at least, I mean, it's easier said than done. It's the Happy Gilmore scene where he gets a hole in one and he says, oh, I'm going to just do that every time. That's way easier. But we spent the whole podcast basically talking about the Rays defense and their positioning and how it's so hard to get hits off them. While the one place they can't position their fielders is in the stands, and you hit the ball over the fence, there's nothing they can do about it. The Red Sox hit 5 home runs, and I know people say that October is for small ball and all that, but I mean, it's just, it's not the case. Especially against a team like the Rays, who are going to play great defense, and they're not going to give you a lot of walks. It's going to be hard to string together those rallies. You got to hit the ball over the fence. So the Red Sox, I mean, I'm not expecting 5 home runs every game, but yeah, it's nice to see them taking advantage of some mistakes and really punishing them in the air and not hitting grounders or low line drives.
And seeing Devers get one too and not look uncomfortable on the swing seemed like a positive step.
JD too. I mean, they both, the two injured guys, Devers didn't have a huge game. The home run was his only hit. He did draw 2 walks, though. But yeah, I mean, that home run, who said this, but I don't remember where I read it. But somebody was talking about his injury, wrote an article today about his injury, and it said that it hurt when he swung and missed, but when he made contact, it didn't. I don't know enough about the human body to understand how that works, but I'll take his word for it. And yeah, you're right. It certainly didn't look like it hurt when he hit that home run, and that home run was a bomb.
Yeah. So that kind of falls into the theme of the night, right? Well, if it doesn't hurt when you make contact, then just make contact every time.
It's that easy.
Yeah.
Bullpen pitched pretty well. Obviously, we talked about Houck. He was outstanding. But after Houck, 3 guys came in. Ryan Brazier came in, was unbelievable. Brazier is just on one right now. I don't understand. Every time he comes in, I still get a little nervous. But he came in, he struck out the side, all 3 batters he faced. He's up there with Whitlock and Robles right now. I mean, I guess Houck is there too, but Houck is going to be out of commission, I'm guessing, for at least the next game, probably the next 2. Is it like Whitlock, Robles, Brazier now? Am I forgetting something? Maybe Josh Taylor if the matchups call for it, but I mean, Brazier is in that group, and it happened in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, that is, I believe, exactly the order of the three that I had. So on the preview pod a couple days ago, we talked about like ranking the bullpen arms and how confident you are. And I'm pretty sure that was Whitlock was the number 1 for all of us.
Yeah.
Robles with the way he's been going. And then Brazier. And Brazier's one of those guys that, particularly with bullpen guys, Cora, like, just, he finds a guy and really kind of sticks with him for better or for worse. And more often than not, it works out. But Brazier's one of those guys. There's been a lot of times where I've had just absolutely no faith in Brazier, but Cora keeps going to him. And he's kind of repaying that faith with him now with this extended run of success that he's had, that coming in a pinch in the situation to get 3 strikeouts, limit the damage and get out of it was huge.
Yeah, and did it quickly. I mean, 13 pitches. His slider was awesome. I mean, he threw a few just nasty sliders. The velocity was up on his fastball. He's looking like he did in 2018, which is a very good thing. Robles also came in, looked good, did give up a hit, but struck out 2, didn't give up a run. I think Robles is obviously pretty established in that late inning situation. And then Matt Barnes came in for the 9th. Matt Barnes was added to the roster before this game. Garrett Richards was taken off the roster with a hamstring issue. So if the Red Sox do make it into the ALCS, Richards cannot be there for that. But Barnes came in for some, I guess, mop-up duty. It was, I don't know if it's still mop up if you're leading, but he came in for blowout duty, an 8-run lead. He did not look good. He walked a couple guys, gave him a hit, but still didn't give up a run. I don't think it's really worth talking much about Barnes right now, just because that's probably a conversation for the offseason. But at this point, he's just a low leverage guy, and that's what he was today. And it was kind of infuriating to watch, and it was annoying because I just wanted to get the game over with so I could go to bed earlier. But, no harm, no foul. It is what it is.
Yeah, and a small correction. I found my list. It was Whitlock, Houck, then Robles, and Brazier.
And I think Houck is still obviously there, too. It's just, like I said, throwing 5 innings today, he's at least not pitching the next game.
Yep.
And we've put it off, but I mean, there was one glaring negative in this game. We mentioned it, but we should probably spend a little more time on it. Chris Sale just was not good. I will say I think he was hurt a little bit by Kyle Schwarber playing first base. Schwarber cannot move over there. His range is about 4 inches in either direction. So there were a couple balls that I thought he could have at least knocked down. Maybe that changes the inning a little bit, but even if Sale maybe doesn't give up those runs in the first and goes a little bit longer, it was never going to go well with him. He didn't have it. That changeup is just not a pitch he can use right now, and it's killing him to be a two-pitch guy. The grand slam to Luplow, at the time at least, felt like the real backbreaker, and it was the backbreaker for his outing. And, I mean, that was a fastball pretty fairly, I mean, not significantly above the zone, but it was, like, safely above the zone. And Luplow was able to catch up with his ease and put it over the fence. And I mean, I think that more than anything says where Sale is right now, that he's got to be able to get that fastball by guys. And it was destroyed.
Yeah. Last start, we kind of saw him start to move away from his changeup, limiting himself to being a two-pitch pitcher. And they're both of those pitches are just not where he needs them to be. And we pretty much saw that continue this start. He threw one changeup in the 30 pitches that he threw. So he basically abandoned it and was just going slider, fastball. And they were both slightly down on the pitch velocity compared, average pitch velocity compared to the season. So I just think it's kind of getting a little bit of wear on him now. And not only that, he's just struggling to locate it, too. He got zero whiffs on his fastball.
Yeah.
And if you're starting from there, that's an uphill battle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Chris Sale, like peak Chris Sale a few years ago, 2017, 2018, Chris Sale can get by without a changeup. Because peak Chris Sale, his fastball is actually like three different pitches, and his slider is good enough that he could probably throw that every time and be fine. But yeah, he's just not that guy right now. And again, this is another conversation that I think we'll have a lot in the offseason, and there's something to be said about coming off Tommy John and all that. I don't know that hitting the panic button for the duration of Chris Sale's contract is necessarily the most rational move right now. But I think in the short term, being worried about Chris Sale is absolutely rational. And I mean, does he start another game in the series? We're at least guaranteed a game four now. And even that's up in the air as to who starts. But if they get to a game five, are you willing to put Chris Sale out there? Because I don't know if I am.
I don't think I am.
Yeah, it's not a great feeling.
No. And I don't know. I mean, I guess it's got to be Houck, right?
I don't know.
It's a really short rest, though.
Yeah, well, so I don't think there's any plan right now, and I don't think there can be. I think you just gotta hope that Eovaldi gives you a good start on Monday, and he gets through like five or six, and you can save some of those bullpen arms. And then but I think they're just gonna basically just try and patch things together for game four and game five if it ends up being necessary. But because it's amazing that they were able to split these two games with their starters going a combined 2 2/3 innings.
Yeah. No kidding.
They might as well have been using an opener for these games, because both starters don't make it out of the second inning, and then, or don't make it, Sale didn't even make it to the second inning, and then Pivetta goes 4 2/3 and out goes 5. I mean, it's not how they drew it up, but at the end of the day, you go into a 5-game series as the road team. You're just looking for one win in those first two games, and they got it, and now they have home field advantage. I'm still kind of wrapping my head around how quickly things turned from yesterday.
Yeah, and I also briefly just forgot that Nick Pivetta exists. He's probably your Game 5 starter, assuming that you don't then need him to piggyback Eduardo Rodriguez again.
Well, that's what I think the issue is, because I think he might be the Game 4 starter, honestly. And if he's not, I think then you're at least having a pretty good idea that you're going to have to use him in that game. So that's why I said you're kind of patching it together, and it depends on the context. If you can avoid using Pivetta somehow, that would be great, but I don't know. But like I said, they're still,
as long as it's not Martin Perez.
Yeah. Oh God, I didn't even think of that. Watch, that's gonna happen. It's gonna be Alex Verdugo, who apparently.
Yeah, I saw that.
To be a two-way player, he's convinced. He said by 2023 he will be able to pitch in relief. I think he had talked about this before, okay. And I think his idea was just to be a guy that the team could go to in a blowout to save the relievers, which I guess, but. I don't know. Again, this is a conversation for the offseason, but yeah, that's a story that came up today. Alex Verdugo has his heart set on pitching, so that'll be an interesting thing to monitor this weekend. Anything else from this game that I haven't touched on yet? Got a Danny Santana appearance?
Yeah. I don't think so. I think we covered it all.
I think we got it, too. So, we're not going to record a podcast tomorrow, obviously, because... we need a day off. So we can do game three predictions this time. I don't want to brag, but we kind of nailed it. Not with the score. I don't think any of us got the score even remotely close, but we did. Nope. All three of us did call Red Sox wins. Last one. So what do you got for game three? It's Eovaldi against Rasmussen, right? Yeah, Rasmussen.
Yeah. I'm going to go 3-0 Red Sox.
I'm going to go 5-1 Red Sox. Eovaldi goes 7 shutout. And
would that feel great? This is why this game in particular was huge, because
now you've got
Eovaldi going at home, and you feel like you've got all the momentum of the series on your side.
Yeah, yeah. It's I think this is a big one.
That's why Sale's poor first inning felt so deflating, because it felt like the beginning of the end of the entire series.
Yeah, it felt like the series. I mean, we won't name names, but somebody in our group. Our group DM may or may not have sent a broom emoji a little prematurely, but I don't think anybody pushed back on it either. So
yeah.
things swung very quickly for the better. But yeah, I think that'll do it for today's show. It's getting a little late here, so we'll wrap this one up. But I hope you guys enjoyed what you heard. If you did, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us a rating and a review, if applicable, on those platforms. You can follow us on Twitter. I run the Over the Monster account, at Over the Monster. Keaton is at The Spoken Keats. And you can find all of our writing at overthemonster.com. And we'll be back with you Monday morning.